This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back in On The Drive. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up in 30 minutes, we will be joined by former K-State great Darren Sproles. We'll be on the show coming up in 30 minutes. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. We'll also go inside the mind of the machine coming up in 15 minutes. Can you guys clarify one thing for me? This just popped in my mind, and I need your help as two people who drink White Claw. So, Sean, you enjoy a nice White Claw from time to time. Rob, I believe you also partake in the beverage called White Claw, right?
I'm getting destroyed about my White Claw take. Like, people are like, oh, a machine can only drink six, and to be honest with you, I was pretty drunk after four.
So this is my question. This is where I'm a little bit confused, because I remember in the very beginning whenever these straw burritas and lime burritas and all of those hit the scene, everybody told me that those were a girly drink. Like, you can't drink those. You're a man. You got to drink something else. How are these White Claws and Trulies any different than drinking Ritas? How are they any different? They seem like the cousins to me. Now, I've had one of these White Claws before. It tastes like unseasoned water to me. I don't understand the appeal of it. It's absolutely disgusting. But I also don't like sparkling water. So I can understand how if you like sparkling water, they put a little drink on it. It's cool. But I'm just saying is, if it was girly to drink the Lime-A-Ritas when Bud Light was making them and they were coming up with a new flavor, how is it not girly to now drink these White Claws and Trulies? They seem like the exact same marketing.
Well, there are certain drinks that, for whatever reason, over the years have been determined to be either a macho, machismo drink, you know. If you want to put some hair in your chest, C-Dot, get yourself a nice glass of scotch, you know, just like the good top shelf scotch. And, you know, if you're a lady, it's like, oh, she's going to drink a certain drink, and you can't drink that because you're a dude. I feel like White Claw is down the middle. I feel like White Claw is one of those where it's just a t-shirt. A guy can wear it, a girl can wear it, and it's the same thing.
White Claw,
it's not a Rita.
Me,
a Rita, I mean, it's called a Rita.
I'm asking, what's different about it? I'm asking, honestly, I don't know. What's different about it? Because for me, from the outside looking, as someone who has tasted both of them, they seem to be related to each other. Like, one's the big homie, one's the little homie in this. They are not much different. If you're sitting here and you got your Paul Pierce jersey on and you're drinking alcohol from this skinny white can with the unicorn on it, that's a manly thing. That's different than the Rita. Like, no, they are the exact same in all of this. I just want to know what's different in the two. If you enjoy the White Claws, then go out there and have as many White Claws as you like. I'm here telling you just simply to drink responsibly. I'm just simply asking, because to me, White Claws seem like when you're 19, but you don't want to go get that hard liquor. So you stand outside the liquor store and then you try to convince someone older to go in there and buy you White Claws. That's what it seems like to me. It seems like if you don't want to smoke weed yet and you vape, you also drink White Claws. I just want to know the difference.
I don't do any of that stuff. You won't catch me smoking weed. That's illegal. I don't know what you're talking about. This 19-year-old, you got to be 21 to drink. Those are the laws. That's how it goes. I think that White Claw, you nailed it when you talked about the taste.
It has a unicorn on the
packaging. It's not about the packaging so much. It's a little embarrassing to be holding on to one of those cans. I'll admit that. It's not the manliest looking drink of all of them out there. But when it comes to the taste, there are people like me that don't necessarily like the strong taste of alcohol. I really want much flavor. That's why if you ask me, hey, Sean, back in college, what beer did you drink the most? The answer is Natural Light. You know why? One, it was cheap. Two, it was tasteless. After about three of them, it tastes like water. About 10 of them, you were passed out. So, and the whole thing cost you $3 for the entire night. To me, that's the part of the appeal of White Claw also is it's not too harsh of a flavor, and it's not too expensive. So, pretty much, it works for a large majority of the people.
Yeah, less sugary
really quick,
than the
Ritas, really quick, sorry. Though, you know who has a large majority of the people in this country? Women. look at the census. A large majority of Americans and people in the world are women. So, again, I'm not here faulting any. Hey, if you are a man and you enjoy drinking White Claws, I'm not here making fun of you. I'm just saying is the same people that are heard down in straw burritos now love to go fishing and hunting and drink White Claws. Bruh, one is six. One is half a dozen. They are the exact same.
No, they're a little bit different. I can't put my finger on exactly what makes them different.
That's why. You're struggling to explain it because it's the same.
It's perfectly acceptable. Male, female, black, white, fat, skinny, old, young, rich, poor to drink a White Claw. And that's what makes it great. It's almost like the Sprite of beers. Like you can look at somebody and if you saw a guy at a restaurant order a Shirley Temple, you'd be like, what, dog? What are you talking about? You're 43 years old, you got a Shirley Temple, but if dude orders a Sprite, nobody's ever made fun of somebody ordering a Sprite. That's what a White Claw is. It's a normal average thing to drink. That's all.
Rob, as someone who enjoys White Claw, can you explain it to me?
It's less sugary than the Rita, first and foremost. And secondarily, the Sprite analogy is spot on. It's a refreshing beverage on a hot summer day. If I was allowed to go into bars and restaurants safely, I would not order one. But a nice hot afternoon, I'm laying out, getting my tan on. That's White Claw season. That's the spot.
Okay, so I'm just asking, what makes one manly as opposed to the other one? Are the nutrition facts on the back? That's what makes one manly. Is one has higher sugar concentrate, so that's what we're judging whether it's manly or not?
I've only had one bad. How many flavors do they have of White Claw, Rob?
I've only had six or seven. So they
six,
at least,
or seven?
Six or seven? Damn, six I've had seven. Three. I had no idea they made that many.
He's a White Claw connoisseur.
Because my entire point was going to be that I've only had one bad kind, but I've only had three of them.
What
do I know, Rob?
What are the three you've had?
I had the cherry kind. I had the lemon. I think it was lemon lime kind.
They got a lemon and a lime.
Okay, I had the lemon then. And then I had I don't remember, it was passion fruit or it was something. It was too much.
Hold on. Help me understand. Drinking a Shirley Temple, girly. Drinking a hard seltzer that comes in a skinny white can that has passion fruit on it, not girly.
No, that's the one I didn't like.
Okay, not girly.
Not because of that, okay. Though. I didn't like
I'm
the
just
flavor
trying to understand.
Of it.
I'm just trying to get it. I don't understand.
I'm not worried. If people want to look at me, I've never been the guy at the bar. Like, if I'm drinking something that it's pink in color and is like looks like a slushy from 7-Eleven and has a little umbrella in it, I'm not embarrassed. You should be embarrassed for judging me. I don't divide my drinks down this line by the sexes, like male or female. I understand that some people do. Like, would you judge? So if there's a really, really good looking girl and she was taking a shot of what's the manliest drink on the market, Rob? Like, what's the most interesting man in the world?
Like how I've become a local alcoholic on this show.
Well, more than me and C-Dot. So I'm just saying, would you look down on her for drinking that?
I might be more turned on to be completely real with
you
about it.
Yes. If she bellies up to the bar and she goes, get me a glass of scotch. With no ice.
She a classy lady.
Put a little bit more in, bartender. Put a little bit more in it. You know, don't be scared. And then she just sat there with a straw or without and just drank the entire thing. Yeah, that's my kind of girl.
Coming up in about 25 minutes, we'll be joined by Darren Sproles, the former K-State great. Darren Sproles will be on the show coming up in about 25 minutes. I had a question to ask you guys very quickly about Cam Newton, because I think there's a strong argument to be made that over the last 20 years, Cam Newton is the best college football player. You could certainly make a case for Joe Burrow and what he did last year, but if we're making the short list, Reggie Bush, Vince Young, Tim Tebow, Cam Newton has to be near the front of that list with what he accomplished in the 1 year, especially when you think about the talent that was around him. It was him, Michael Dyer, if you remember it, running back, Nick Fairley, and that was basically it, and they went undefeated and won the national championship. given the hype and expectation on Cam when he came out of Auburn and was drafted number one overall, do you think that he has lived up to expectations from where he was drafted and what his college potential was?
I would say overall, yes. But I would say if you broke it down season by season, and if one of the things that you like from your athletes is consistency, then no. Because you can go back to that season where Cam had, what, 35 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. His team went 15-1. I mean, we always talk about the undefeated the Patriots team that ended up losing to the Giants and the Dolphins. This was the team that came the closest, and we never talk about him, the Cam Newton-led Panthers. That year, he was also the league MVP. The problem is, see, that he never had another year that was anywhere close to that. In fact, Cam has averaged about 22 touchdown passes and 12 interceptions on average throughout his career. And if you told me that coming out of college, I mean, you want to talk about an accomplished player. He's got the MVP. He's been to a Super Bowl. His team's been 15-1. He's got a Heisman Trophy. He's won a national championship. There's nothing else that you can do besides winning a Super Bowl, except for maybe being a little bit more consistent. So overall, I would actually say that Cam Newton's career has pretty much been what I thought it was going to be coming out of college.
I'm going to go with no. I think Cam's been a little bit of a disappointment. You know who Cam is? Cam's Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
Carmelo Anthony has had a great NBA career. But, man, if you had told me back in 2003 when I saw him at Syracuse that his team would never play for the Eastern Conference Championship, he would never go to an NBA Finals, never make all defense, and that he would maybe be, what, the 15th best player of his generation, I would have told you that you were crazy about Carmelo Anthony. I mean, that's kind of what Cam Newton has been. Cam Newton has had one transcendent season, 2015. Aside from that, he's been a slightly above average quarterback. How many years would you say definitively Cam was a top 10 quarterback in the league? Would you say it was consistent every year, 2012, 2013, 2014, where you were like, Cam is undeniably a top 10 quarterback in the league? I don't think he's been that. I think Cam's been a little bit disappointing. I would certainly never call him a bust. He was not that. But based on how great of a college player he was and what I believe Cam's potential to be, I don't really think Cam progressed a whole lot as a player throughout the course of his career. He sort of stayed pretty stagnant as opposed to that one year. You knew what to expect from him from a running ability. You knew what to expect from him from a passing ability. And that's basically what he was for 10 years in Carolina.
And that's part of the story, though, is Cam Newton and his running ability, because look at the best quarterback in the league right now. They can all run to some extent. Like, none of those guys are Phillip Rivers or Drew Brees, where they're just Eli Manning, where they're just statues that don't run at all. Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, all these different dudes, Deshaun Watson, all these different players kind of play in that style of Cam Newton, where they can throw, but they can also really run. I mean, Cam Newton, check this out. So as a rookie, Cam Newton rushed for 733 yards. The year after that, 747. Cam Newton, his career, has 5,000 rushing yards. You know how many Phillip Rivers has in his entire career? 18. In his career. Again, Cam Newton has 4,839. So you can talk about the passing, but
I think Cam's been a better. Or I think that Phillip Rivers has been a better player than Cam Newton.
I agree with that. I'm just talking about versatility, because there's one thing that Phillip Rivers could do throughout his career, and that's throw. Cam Newton could throw a little bit. I mean, he didn't really have. He got the big arm. The problem is always accuracy with Cam, but he could run. I mean, he was a little bit ahead of his time when it comes to multi-threat type quarterbacks.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll be joined by K-State great Darren Sproles. Will be on the show coming up in 20 minutes. But first, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. That's next. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Some breaking news in the world of the NBA. It sounds like Dwight Howard is not sure if he is going to go inside the bubble with the Los Angeles Lakers. You already know Avery Bradley. He has opted out because of his family. One of Dwight Howard's kids passed away recently. The Lakers are staying in touch with him, and they're hopeful that he will be with them at some point in Orlando. But it is not a certainty that Dwight Howard will play when the NBA tries to resume its season. Dwight Howard would be a very big absence for the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, one of their big advantages when the playoffs is just the size that they have with Anthony Davis and him. Dwight sort of has repackaged himself and rebranded himself in a pretty big way. Now he's a defense, rebound, do the dirty work kind of guy. Like, he's turned into a pretty pivotal role player. They already lost one in Avery Bradley, who I think is a pretty good defensive player. It'd be a big loss to not have him and Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard's been around for so long that I think he went went from being one of the five most popular players in the entire NBA and most likable to one of the five most unlikable players in the NBA with the whole Kobe stuff the first time he was with the Lakers to now. I think there's a lot of people that don't even realize that he's still in the league, let alone plays for the Lakers, let alone, like you said, he's actually having a productive season. Dwight Howard's had one hell of a weird career.
It's weird because Dwight Howard's probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of the best defensive players from the numbers in the history of the NBA, but I'm with you. It has taken a very weird turn where he has certainly gone from being a very popular figure to a very polarizing figure. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Darren Sproles, former K-State great. Before we do all that, on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app, let's go inside the mind of the machine.
Kevin Durant, now that I think about it, kind of the same way, where he was incredibly beloved. Then I would say the majority of people weren't a huge fan of him, and now it feels like there's kind of a bit of a resurrection for his career, if you will, now that he's a member of the Nets.
Kind of stinks that he had to tear his Achilles for people right to get over the fact that he joined a team they didn't want him to join.
Hey, Rob, did my guy Paul Pogba score the first goal in the game? Did I win my bet?
He did not.
Somebody else did?
It was Mason Greenwood.
Never
and then
the
second goal was Bruno Fernandes. Mm. But Pogba did assist on the second goal.
Well, that doesn't get me any money. Oh, well. Can't win them all. Tom Cruise, was once in a movie called Born on the 4th of July. You ever seen it?
I've never seen that movie before. I've never heard of it until just this moment.
Oh, yeah. It's a good movie. What's the better Tom Cruise movie, Top Gun or Mission Impossible?
I've actually never seen Top Gun before, so I can't really speak on it before. Mission Impossible is a series that I enjoy. It is one of those movies where I find myself very frustrated at the television because, correct me if I'm wrong, Ethan Hunt is not a superhero, but every movie he does some things that no human being is capable of doing. I understand that you gotta bend belief just a little bit, but I'm asking for him to still follow the simple law of physics.
How have you not seen Top Gun? Have you avoided it or?
Just never seen it.
Just kind of curious because that's probably Tom Cruise's biggest movie, right? At least the one he's most well known for, I would think. Jerry Maguire, Rob, overrated, underrated, properly rated?
I'm going to say overrated in the fact that it's a sports movie because I was told this is a great sports movie. You're going to love it. It's not. It's a romantic comedy. It's a properly rated romantic comedy. It's an overrated sports movie.
Did you know the human head weighs 8 pounds?
I did not.
Celebrity birthday time, Rob. How old is J-Lo this week?
J-Lo's like 51.
Yeah, she is 51. Good for you.
I was going to guess 53. Good play.
Karl Malone, Rob. You're up again. Karl Malone.
I'm going to say 47 for Karl Malone.
Oh, I think he's a little older than that. I don't know.
Thinking about this one.
49.
Karl Malone is 57. Mac Lethal, C-Dot, how old is he this week?
Oh, that's my guy. 36.
I don't know how old he was when he was like wildly popular. So that was probably like 09. He was 25.
Give me a damn age, Rob.
36.
39. Mac Lethal turns 39 years old coming up here.
Salute to him.
This week, to win the NBA Finals, Carrington, you can either take the LA teams or you can take the field. Who are you putting your money on?
I would take the LA teams. I think the Clippers are going to win the NBA championship. I just think they're deeper and tougher. And I think in a situation like this, like, you're going to need the depth and you're going to need the mental toughness. We've seen enough of Kawhi Leonard to know he ain't being rattled about anything that happened. Same thing for Patrick Beverly. Montrezl Harrell's the same way. Yeah, I think the Clippers win the championship. I don't trust Giannis at this time of the season. Like, if you can't consistently hit 20-footers or deep, I just don't know if you can win this tournament.
That's the one part of Giannis's game. Like, earlier you were comparing him to Kevin Durant, and somebody brought up Dirk. Those guys could just knock down the three. That's the one part of Giannis's game. Now, to be fair, he's much better post player than both of those guys ever were.
I don't think he's a better post player than Dirk was.
Dirk just had that sick turnaround baseline shot. I think that it's almost impossible to stop Giannis down in the paint toward the basket. He just needs to learn how to drop that three-point shot. We were talking about Darren Sproles. He's actually going to join us on the show coming up in a few minutes. Who's your favorite all-time NBA shorty? I'll take Spud Webb. I mean, not only was the guy, 5'4", he won the damn dunk contest.
I'll take Earl Boykins.
Earl Boykins off the board.
As a name. I liked Earl Boykins. I don't really have a reason why, but I liked Earl Boykins.
Hooper. Absolute Hooper.
Nate Robinson, by the way.
Also a Hooper.
Nate Robinson was a Hooper. And he was the littlest guy on the court, talked the most trash. I loved that about him.
I didn't like Nate Robinson because if you remember when they did those dunk contests, that was when they would let people miss like 19 dunks. Like, no. Or it was bad. It was real bad. So for that reason, I don't like Nate Robinson.
Pull up his stat sheet. Over-under on teams Nate Robinson played for, C-Dot, 6.
I was actually going to set it at 6. Yeah, probably 5 or 6 if I had to guess.
I'm gonna take the overs. I think that there's probably – it's kind of like Shaq at the end of his career. You just forgot that he played for the Suns and the Celtics and the Cavaliers. That dude's had to play for like 8 or 9 teams.
8. He was 8? A Knick, a Celtic, a member of the Thunder, Warrior, Bull. He then was a Nugget, Clipper, and Pelican.
Exactly. I literally don't remember those last 3. I remember him last as a Bull. I had no idea he played for those other
Nate
teams.
Nate Robinson probably made like $80 million in his NBA career.
I'm going to go under that, but I'm going to say he made over – I'm going to say he made half that. I think he played for 8 teams, probably, what, 8 or 9 years. I'm going to say he made $40 million in the NBA.
After your next question, I'll look it up.
All right, looking forward to that. Rob, overrated, underrated, properly rated. Eric Hosmer.
Ooh, that's a really good one.
Just say how you feel.
I'm going to say he's properly rated because I think as Kansas City fans over time realize what he is. He's a really good baseball player, but he was never the transcendent player that people thought he'd be when they drafted him. So I think because people understand and have a correct frame of reference for him, I'll say properly rated.
I actually agree with everything Rob said. I would say for the contract, though, he is overrated. I never wanted the Royals to sign him to a long-term deal. I felt like that was only going to be a negative in the moment. It's kind of like when you buy a new car and they say that it depreciates in value the moment you drive it off the lot. I felt the exact same way about Hosmer signing a new deal. But in Kansas City, I think he was properly rated to what Rob said. We knew his strengths and his weaknesses, but I would have never signed him to a long-term deal.
Over, under, properly rated, C-Dot, Devin Hester.
Underrated. I think Devin Hester's the best return man in the history of the NFL and should be in the Hall of Fame.
Can you give us the answer to the question? I've been waiting patiently.
$23.8 million for Nate
Robinson. $23.8 million. He did all right for himself. Did you have a favorite short baseball player? Pedro Martinez.
No, not really. I can't think of that off the top of my head.
Fair enough. On Cody and Gold, speaking of baseball, I went on their show earlier today, and Gold was talking about how he's got back into baseball card collecting. Did you know that was still a thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I follow Darren Revell, so he always tweets out those things. I remember last year we had that pack-a-day giveaway. I used to go to their store and talk to the manager.
I had less than no idea. Did you collect when you were a kid?
I do. I still have my baseball cards. Yeah, no, it's actually a really big deal. I remember talking to the guy who ran the baseball card store in Mission. He was saying how it's a lot of money in prospects right now, and there's a lot of money in those cards where they cut a piece of the jersey.
Apparently, Patrick Mahomes cards are going from, like, you can get – the baseline's like a couple $100 for the crappy ones, all the way up to, according to Gold, like $50,000 and $100,000, which is absolutely insane. What was your go-to card that you had in the thickest class?
Happy to know that because I have a Patrick Mahomes rookie card that I am saving one day to get rich.
Well, there you go. It's probably one of the cheap ones, I would imagine. Not like the $50,000 ones, but who cares?
I got it for free. Yeah, so you got it. Whatever value it has is more than what I paid for.
That's what I'm saying. The Mets are considering bringing up Tim Tebow to the roster. We were talking earlier about the best college football player of all time.
Bringing Tim Tebow up to the roster for 6 years.
Well, yeah.
How long have we been talking about this? I remember on this show having a topic, who gets to the majors first, Bubba Starling or Tim Tebow? We've been talking about Tebow getting to the league for a long time.
Well, Bubba beat him. Are you sure that Cam Newton had a better college football career than Tim Tebow?
If we're talking for one individual season, yes, I do think the best of Cam Newton was better than Tim Tebow. It's going to be difficult to argue career just because Cam was only great for the 1 year and declared for the NFL, where when he was at Florida, he was Tebow's backup.
Speaking of college quarterbacks, and we'll get out of here after this, which is quarterback you now? Is it still USC or is it Oklahoma based on what they've done the last 5 years?
It's Oklahoma. I don't really think it's that close between the ones. I mean, you get back-to-back first-round draft picks, number one overall draft picks, and Heisman Trophy winners. That is the it place to go. And Jalen Hurts, the second-round draft pick. Like, Jalen Hurts would not have been drafted in the second round had he stayed at Alabama.
And you are now outside the mind of the machine.
Speaking of NFL players who were drafted, coming up next, we'll be joined by Kansas State great Darren Sproles. Darren Sproles will join us on the show. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
They set the middle screen, and here comes Sproles, first down midfield.
Very happy to be joined by our next guest here momentarily. We are set to be joined by Kansas State great Darren Sproles joining us in just a little bit. You know that saying, the enemy of your enemy is a friend? Mm-hmm. I've never had any issues with K-State. Always loved K-State. They've never done anything wrong to me. Their rival is also my rival, so I've always been able to team up with them in trying to overcome our enemy, which is the University of Kansas. Sproles has always been one of my favorite players. Just a really productive, great college player, always played well on the big stages, maximized all of his ability, went to the NFL, was always a do-everything kind of back. If you needed a running back to get 600 yards, he could do so. If you needed a running back to catch for 600 yards, he could do so. You needed a big punt return or a kick return, battled through injuries. I always had a lot of respect for Darren Sproles, so I'm really happy he's coming on.
And on top of that, stayed local. I mean, if you check out his numbers in high school, they were probably better than, I'm trying to think, I mean, locally, Rockhurst has had some ballers. Blue Springs, easy for me to say, has had some ballers. But if you think about what he was able to do in high school and then stayed local because everybody wanted him and then committed to K-State and decided to go play for Bill Snyder and have a ton of success out there. And as Rob said, finished top five in the Heisman Trophy voting. Great guy and literally one of the all-time great college football careers.
I'm just trying to think of high school football players in Kansas City that I felt like there was a legitimate buzz about. Like Drew Locke, obviously starting quarterback in the NFL now. I don't really know if there was that kind of buzz the way that it was for Darren Sproles when he was playing football in Olathe. The only other player that I can maybe think of would be Tony Temple. Like, yeah. Tony Temple's senior year was a big deal in Kansas City and people followed him. That's maybe the only comparison. Like, we've seen guys from Kansas City play Division I football and then go on to the NFL, but I'm talking about where there were conversations in barbershops about that player and everybody knew who he was. Maybe there's three people. I'd probably include Bubba Starling because everybody knew he had that big decision on whether he wanted to go to Nebraska or make the decision to play for the Royals. Those are the three that I think sort of elevated to that point where we talked about them like they were professional athletes.
I would put Jerron Rush in there also. Of
yeah,
course.
I agree.
He came a couple of generations, a full generation before all these guys, but if we're talking about, yeah, the four or five high school players. Now, not necessarily that went on and had great success in the pros because of all those guys that you mentioned, Darren Sproles, as far as a local product goes, I mean, if we're talking about Jerron Rush and Bubba Starling and some of these other guys, Darren Sproles not only was an incredible college player, he was great at every stop in the NFL, whether he was an Eagle or a Saint or the Chargers. Everywhere he went, it seemed like that team kept winning.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll play a brand new edition of the Carrington Hypothetical Button Game. But right now, we are very happy to be joined by our next guest. He is one of the greatest college football players of all time. He is also up for induction into the College Football Hall of Fame. K-State great, played for multiple NFL teams. Darren Sproles joins us on the show. Darren, really appreciate you coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
What have you been up to now in retirement?
Well, the kids are out of school, so we've been doing like the homeschooling stuff like that. And I'm playing a lot of golf.
What memories, what games do you think most fondly on?
The ones that really like stick out to me is when 2003, we went up there, Nebraska, and we got to win up there. And then like, we haven't went up there in, I think it was like 8 years or something like that. So that was a big time. That was a big time win for us. And then I'll have to say, the Big 12 championship game.
Why did you decide to stay local and play your college football at K-State? Because obviously you had an all-time, maybe the greatest all-time running back to come from the state of Kansas when it comes to your high school career. Why did you choose K-State over pretty much anywhere else that wanted you?
My reason to choose K-State was when I went up there, all the players, it was pretty much like a family. Like they all were close. That's what I really liked about it. It was more like a family up there.
How long did it take you to realize that you could be what you turned out to be at the Division I level? Because obviously in high school you had a ton of success, and then once you get to K-State and play in the Big 12, it's a completely different level of competition. How long did it take you to eventually become the guy that you did in Manhattan?
Like my sophomore year, we played USC the first game of the season or something like that. But I think like that game kind of like gave me my confidence. We were playing against like Troy Polamalu and all them. Like I really feel like that game really gave me like a little edge. I feel like.
Which of those teams did you consider to be more of your rival? Was it Nebraska, Missouri, or Kansas?
I feel like our rival was Nebraska at the time because they had that history of like winning the Big 12. So I always felt good when you can beat them. That was big time.
couple more questions here. You grew up in Kansas City. You grew up locally. I'm sure at some point as a kid you went to Arrowhead and watched a game. What was it like to play an NFL game at Arrowhead for the first time?
Like, my first time playing back there, like, as a pro, to get me killed. Because so my first game as a child was when the Chiefs played the Lions back in the day when they had Barry Sanders. And then my first memory there, like, you know what I'm saying? So for me to go back and to play in the stadium, that could mean a lot to me.
Who was somebody that you sort of modeled your game after, just being one of the smaller backs and having the career that you had in college in the NFL? Who was a running back that you looked up to? Who was someone you emulated?
It's a couple. Barry Sanders was one. Ward Dunn and Kadarius Thompson. So I tried to take something from each player.
So you get drafted in the NFL, and you get drafted to a team that has a first-ballot Hall of Fame running back, one of the best running backs in the league. What was it like to play behind him?
It actually was great because, for me, coming in as a rookie, like, I really need to learn some stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like he was the guy that taught me how to be a pro, like, with the massages and, like, the film watching and stuff like that. Like, when I first came into the league, like, I really know how to watch no film, but he kind of taught me, like, what to look for. That really helped me out a lot.
That's Darren Sproles joining us on the show. It was an honor to get a chance to catch up with one of the greatest high school players, one of the greatest college players to play here locally. I was looking this up because I think it's hard maybe for some younger people to understand how good Nebraska was and the dominance that they had over teams in this area. So just to give you some historical comparison, Nebraska beat K-State every year from 1969 until 1997. Every single year that they played, Nebraska won that football game. Against Kansas, your school, they beat them 36 consecutive times. From 1969 until 2004, Nebraska won their football games. For Missouri, they beat them every year from 1979 until 2003. It was a foregone conclusion that Nebraska had three wins on their schedule because of the teams that they played back in the old Big Eight. So it was a huge deal to get over the hump. Like, I can't speak on what it was for Kansas, but I remember, like, whenever that Brad Smith Missouri team finally beat Nebraska and they broke the streak and the students stormed the field, and you think about the Scott Frost flea kicker games and all the times they used to just smack Missouri around, it was a big deal to finally beat Nebraska. Like, if you want to talk about all-time dynasties and just reign over a conference, Nebraska's is up there at the top with USC, Miami, Alabama, Notre Dame, all of those great college football programs.
Yeah, so like you said, it was a couple of years after that that KU finally, would you say they lost 36 straight mm-hmm. games against Nebraska? And then 2007 rolled around. You probably remember that year. It ended in the 2008 Orange Bowl victory over Virginia Tech. And the Jayhawks took on Nebraska and beat them, wait for it, 76-39. Again, KU football beat Nebraska football 76-39. And Todd Reesing had, I'm going to go LeBron on you here, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, but eight passing touchdowns in that game. So, yeah, it took a while to finally beat it, but once they did, they beat the hell out of those Cornhuskers.
No, absolutely. And you kind of wanted your team to run up the score for all the times that Nebraska ran up the score against your team. Bink just actually sent me a text not too long ago. He said, top three high school players locally I've ever covered, Darren Sproles, Bubba Starling, and Tony Temple. Like, people were bringing up different athletes. And I'm not saying there have not been really good high school kids from Kansas City that have gone on to the pros. Heck, Riley Pint just got drafted top five. Shaquille Harrison plays in the NBA. Like, there's been a lot of kids that have gone to the NBA. I'm talking about the buzz around them. Like, Bubba Starling used to be topics on radio shows when he was in high school. It was just a different level of how we talked about some of these kids. Like, the stories that you hear about Bubba Starling at Gardner-Edgerton sound a lot like Bo Jackson. I'm not calling him Bo Jackson, but some of the Herculean feats people say, and I bet you right now if we open up the text line and say, tell us a Bubba Starling story from when your team played against him, he sounds like a mythological creature.
I want to go see Bubba Starling. He played at, I think it was at ODAC, Olathe District Activities Complex. I don't know who they were playing up against, but it was one of those things where if you didn't get there like 3 hours before high school games, you had to show up at 4 o'clock on a Friday night to get there to see Bubba Starling when he played for Gardner-Edgerton. And the only reason that I got in was because I told him, I was like, hey, I'm a media member. And they said, okay, cool. And I remember standing on the sidelines for the game, and Bubba was the quarterback, and the first snap, he faked a handoff and he ran it up the middle for an 80-yard touchdown. And then he had five more rushing touchdowns and two passing touchdowns. And then halftime got there, and they decided to pull Bubba Starling. He had seven touchdowns in the first half. He was by far, like, if we're just talking about players that I've watched with my own two eyes in high school, baseball, basketball, football, whatever, there was such a difference between Bubba Starling on a football field and everybody else.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we have a brand new edition of the Carrington Hypothetical Button Game. We'll play that coming up in just a little bit. There's also a news story locally that I want to share with you guys coming up momentarily. But before we do that, Rob, hit my theme music. I want to play this audio for you guys from Emmanuel Acho. He was on Speak Yourself on First Things First.
The Patriots with Cam are absolutely a threat to the Chiefs, but make no mistake about it. The Patriots were a threat to the Chiefs beforehand. Woo! I mean, let's think about, let's talk first before we get into the hot take noise. Let's talk facts.
Okay.
The Patriots defense was one of the best defenses we have ever seen in the last 10, 20 years. Top 10 in every statistical category, top 5 in every major statistical category. When you talk about defense, you talk about limiting points. That's what they do best. But now on the flip side, now you add in a game changer. Now you add in a playmaker.
They certainly have added a playmaker in Cam Newton. You would never hear me say otherwise. Do they have any other? Like, correct me if I'm wrong here. I believe it was Tom Brady's own wife that said he can't throw it and catch it himself, right? Who are these other playmakers on the team for us to look at the Patriots as being a legitimate threat to the Kansas City Chiefs? Am I supposed to be worried about 34-year-old Julian Edelman? Did something happen with N'Keal Harry that I should be worried about? Did something happen with Mohamed Sanu that he's somebody that should strike fear into your heart?
Do they not have Antonio Brown?
No, he is not there.
Do they not have Josh Gordon?
No, he's not there either.
Do they not have Rob Gronkowski?
He is not there either.
Oh, maybe I should have paid attention here. They got nobody to throw the ball to.
So I'm just looking at it. How are they a threat to the Kansas City Chiefs? Who are the players that you would consider to be a threat? Like, if I asked you, is Baltimore a threat to Kansas City? You would say, yeah, of course. They got Lamar Jackson. They got J.K. Dobbins, who I think is going to have a big-time season. Mark Ingram I would consider to be a threat. Hollywood Brown last season. Mark Andrews, the tight end. Like, I can name guys who are threats. Who are these guys on the offense for the Patriots that I should be viewing as a threat for the Kansas City Chiefs? Because I don't think they exist.
And when you talk about Cam Newton, I think we always go back to the Heisman Trophy winner, the national champion, the guy that took his team to a Super Bowl, the guy that season won the MVP. But he was only that guy once, and that was 5 years ago. I mean, you look at Tom Brady's stats. So he had a season where he threw for 32 touchdowns, 36, 33, 34, 39, 36. And then he had a season where he threw for 50 touchdowns. Like, that guy is a touchdown passing machine in his prime. And then you've got Cam Newton, who that's never really who he was. Now, of course, he could run much better than Tom Brady ever did. But at this point in his career, it just comes down to, I think, a couple of big questions. One, how healthy is Cam Newton? And two, like you've been saying, C-Dot, who's he going to throw the ball to? Even if he is as accurate as he's ever been, the offensive line keeps him upright, which they were never able to do in Carolina. He got sacked more than anybody not named Andrew Luck or David Carr. Who's he going to throw the ball to? So to me, that's the problem with the Patriots. And to say that because they got Cam Newton, they're all of a sudden in the same conversation with the Chiefs, I don't see that at all. Like, if we were to start checking the boxes and you want to tell me that the Patriots have a better secondary, cool, but they don't have a better defensive line, a better quarterback, a better coach, a better tight end, a better wide receiver, a better offensive line, the Chiefs are just a much more talented football team.
If I'm the New England Patriots, I'm focused on trying to win our division and host a home playoff game. I don't know if you're in the Baltimore heavyweight division. I don't know if you're in the Kansas City heavyweight division. You're in the Tennessee Titans division. Nothing wrong with being in the Tennessee Titans division. But yeah, there's no one on your team I think you should be afraid of. And that includes Cam Newton. There's no one on that Patriots team you should be fearful of.
Funny enough, the Chiefs actually, they got all these teams on the schedule the first 6 weeks, because I think that even though New England's been on the schedule now for a while, we kind of forgot about them because we didn't know they were going to have Cam Newton. But now if you take a peek at it, three of their first four games, Carrington, they got to take on Houston and Deshaun Watson, Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, and New England and Cam Newton. And those are just the first 4 weeks. And then in week six, they got Buffalo. So if they can somehow get through that gauntlet at 6-0, then Fesco's undefeated conversation becomes real. But I seriously doubt that happened, because that's a whole hell of a tough first 6 weeks of the season.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get to a brand new edition of the Carrington Hypothetical Button Game. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. There's been some breaking news in Kansas City. I want to play this for you. So they have officially approved to remove J.C. Nichols from the fountain down by the plaza.
KC Parks and Recreation Commissioner Christopher Good says the time is now to change the name of the J.C. Nichols Fountain to the Dream Fountain and rename J.C. Nichols Parkway after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
This isn't controversy to me. It's just what's right.
In a memo to Parks Commissioners, Good wrote that the current names honoring J.C. Nichols allow racism to take center stage in our most photographed, valued, and visited destination in Kansas City.
But here we are calling ourselves a progressive city, progressive country, and we're still openly celebrating racism. And I'm not okay with that, and I'm not willing to be silent about it anymore.
J.C. Nichols developed neighborhoods in the first half of the 20th century with covenants designed to make them effectively for white families only. Within the next 30 days, residents will have two opportunities to provide input. Those meetings have not yet been scheduled.
So that audio is courtesy of KMPC Channel 9. So it is now official. It will be renamed J.C. Nichols Country Club Plaza, and the fountain is no more. Am I the only one that just sees the very obvious solution to this? Why don't they just name it after Buck O'Neill? Like, doesn't that make all the sense in the world to just call it the Country Club Plaza? Like, why does it have to be named after an individual? No one calls it that. It's just the Country Club Plaza. Just remove the name from it and then just name the fountain Buck O'Neill Fountain. Like, is there any person that I think embodies the spirit of Kansas City better than Buck O'Neill? If you want to throw Ewing Kaufman out there and call it the Kaufman Family Fountain, I don't have any issues with that. But if you're talking about finding one Kansas City individual to name this fountain after, wouldn't that be the most logical choice? To me, this seems like a whole lot of arguing about nothing. That was the name I would suggest. They should just go ahead and name it after him.
I mean, just call it the O'Neill Kaufman Fountain and move on. I'm fine with both. You're not going to get any pushback from people in Kansas City saying you're going to take the J.C. Nichols name off of it and you're going to slap Ewing Kaufman's name up there. Everybody's going to go, oh, cool. He was the biggest philanthropist in the history of our city. And same thing with Buck O'Neill, a beloved figure, absolutely. So I don't think that you're going to get too much pushback on that. Did I hear them say, Rob, that they're renaming it the Dream Fountain? Or did I make that up?
That's what they want to name it.
Okay, that's what they want to name it. Because
I'm telling you what they should do. Rename it after Buck O'Neill, and then any of the money that is thrown into the fountain goes to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Like, how is it? Like, the answer is so obvious, and it's staring everybody right in the face. Why do they want to call it the Dream? No one is going to call that the Dream Fountain.
Just, if you do my idea, and it's the Kaufman-Buck O'Neill Fountain, then half the money goes to all the stuff that Marion Kaufman stood for and all that stuff, and then you give half of it to the Negro Leagues Museum. I love that idea. Or just call it the Patrick Mahomes Fountain. Nobody's going to argue that either.
Yeah, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes is at renaming the fountains at the plaza level yet, but he could get there at some point.
He can get there. You want him to take the country club off the plaza? It can be called the Patrick Mahomes Plaza from now on. If that's what he wants, he gets it.
I mean, man just got here.
I'm calling the Patrick Mahomes Plaza.
Man just got here a couple years ago. I don't know if I'm at that point where I'm ready to rename the plaza to get to Patrick Mahomes. But hey, if you want to set it up where he turns the lights on every year while he's the Chiefs quarterback, cool.
You used that honor. Just a month ago, if you went to the plaza, you would go to the Country Club Plaza to go to the J.C. Nichols Fountain. You're telling me that next week, if you go to the Patrick Mahomes Plaza and go to the Buck O'Neill Fountain, your life hasn't gotten better?
No, it certainly has gotten better. Text line 913-576-7610. Hey, sports machine, that's something that Fesco would say. Let's name it the Mahomes Fountain. I didn't say that. That's what the text line said. The text line said that's a Fesco idea.
Y'all got a problem with naming it the Patrick Mahomes Fountain?
Yes, it should be the Mahomes Fountain.
If you want to rename my neighborhood, right, over there by Westport, the Patrick Mahomes, like, you can take, so if you want to get rid of the 913, the 785, the 816, and just make the area code 15, I'm cool with that, too. I don't know if your phone calls would work if you did all that. I think you need a certain amount of numbers.
No, I get.
But you got my drift,
you know,
right?
I certainly get. I 1,000% get what you were saying.
Yeah.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will get to a brand new edition of the Carrington Hypothetical Button Game. If you wanted optimism around the coronavirus, you have come to the wrong show.
I can't make an accurate prediction, but it is going to be very disturbing. I will guarantee you that. Because when you have an outbreak in one part of the country, even though in other parts of the country they're doing well, they are vulnerable. I made that point very clearly last week at a press conference. We can't just focus on those areas that are having the surge. It puts the entire country at risk. We are now having 40-plus thousand new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around.
Yo, my man Dr. Anthony Fauci said that he thinks if things don't turn around, we are going to get 100,000 new cases of the coronavirus a day. Not a week, not a month. He said every single day. Now, I will say, I do think that sometimes Fauci operates in worst case scenario, but based on what's been happening in this country the last 7 to 10 days, operating in worst case scenario has not been the wrong play.
Have you ever seen the before and after pictures when presidents come into office and then when they leave? Like George Bush comes in looking like he's 50, leaves like he's 80. Same thing with Obama. Like the hair just gets a lot grayer. It's a very, very stressful job. I kind of feel like that's what's going on in this situation, if you get my drift. Like, it's just kind of one of those things where it's incredibly stressful for a lot of people.
Coming up in just a little bit, we will play a brand new edition of the Carrington Hypothetical Button Game. We need four callers, 913-576-7610, 913-576-7610. We'll do that next. Coming up, it's the draft.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.